The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, and look who's on the other side of the glass. My old buddy Ray Allen is with us, engineering and producing the show. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It's Tuesday, June the 9th, 2020. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the signal to get it to you via KVOI.com. Let's go right now on the live line to Phoenix and the Superintendent of Public Instruction for the state of Arizona, Kathy Hoffman. Kathy, how are you?
Doing well, Bill. How are you?
Doing well, trying to hang in there like everybody else. And we're all anxiously awaiting to hear what you have to tell us about how we are going to reopen schools here in Arizona. So go ahead. What is the plan?
Well, it's definitely a complex plan. So if people want to read it in detail, it's all posted on our website, which is azed.gov. And we didn't make this plan by ourselves. We engaged stakeholders from across the state. We had well over 100 people participating on our task force from all different backgrounds. And they helped us. We broke it into subcommittees, and they helped us put together these recommendations. I'm also very grateful that we had the partnership with the Department of Health Services, because I know what is top of the mind of most people is the health and safety of our students and our teachers and staff as we go back into the school buildings in the next academic year. So we made sure to put a lot of recommendations in there, but the plan and all together, we actually call it a roadmap, because we want it to be very adaptable and flexible to meet the needs of our local schools and meet the needs of their local communities.
Will each community then, the local schools, will they be able to set their own guidelines, or how will that work?
By and large, yes, that most of the decisions will be made by our governing boards, but we are strongly encouraging them to be actively engaging with their families, with their teachers and staff. But by and large, we are a local control state, so these are not state mandates. They are recommendations.
And give us a few of the more important ones, Kathy, please.
In terms of health, I think it'll look very familiar to people that it's very closely aligned with the CDC recommendations. I know when I talk with people, they're very concerned about, well, how can we possibly have distancing in our schools when we have had a historic shortage of educators and staff? And so that is the reality of our schools in Arizona, that having proper distancing will be very challenging. So schools can implement other types of mitigation strategies that are recommended as alternatives or as additional types of strategies. But I think that we will see different school communities choosing different options depending on what fits best for their communities. And I think we're going to see a lot of online instruction and online options going into the next school year. I was just talking with Superintendent Trujillo this morning. We were on a panel together, and I know that they're looking at hybrid options. So we made sure that within our roadmap that there were considerations for schools that are thinking about having a more hybrid model. So, you know, having an opportunity for students to still come learn in the school buildings, but also having more online opportunities.
And by the way, for our listeners, we will spend a half an hour from noon to 12:30 with Superintendent Trujillo here on the program. So teachers who are feeling that maybe they're vulnerable in the older perhaps they're in the vulnerable group, or they have some pre-existing conditions, they may not want to come to school, so they may want to teach online.
That's correct. They may want to teach online. I know our schools are looking at different options for our most vulnerable populations, whether it's the staff or even our kids who are medically fragile, that we definitely need to have considerations and plans in place for them. you know, it's not easy to say, oh, you should just teach online, when teachers are used to having their vibrant classrooms, they're used to doing hands-on project-based learning, and now we're asking them to shift to a whole different platform and learn all these, you know, it's a steep learning curve to try to, you can't just easily transform what you were doing in the classroom to now a completely online platform. So we're very aware of that steep learning curve and the demands on our teachers during this time.
When will school open?
By and large, our schools in Arizona open either at the end of July, like the Vail School District, or early August is the majority of our school districts.
I know it's probably hard to kind of put a percentage on what one-on-one or classroom instruction, what percent of the total schools will go to, you know, online or will go face-to-face. It's going to be a kind of every school deciding it might be 50-50 or 40-60, or how do you see that?
Yeah, what I've been hearing, I've been talking regularly with superintendents from across the state, and right now, as they've been surveying their families and asking, what do you prefer? It ranges from district to district, that some say it's 20% or 30%. I've even heard 50% of families who say that they would prefer an online option, that they're not yet ready to go back into the classroom physically. So that's why we're hearing from our school leaders that they want flexibility. They want to be able to continue to serve their families, whether it's in person or online. So we're working with our state lawmakers and other state leaders to make sure that we can find that type of flexibility, ensure that there's also stability in school funding as we move forward.
Kathy Hoffman is with us. She is the Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction. Kathy, how would you grade how this was a really difficult situation when schools had to close down in March and then go to online, and access to computers was difficult for many families? How would you kind of grade this overall experiment of going to online? It was a real challenge, wasn't it?
Yes, it's been a huge challenge for Arizona as a state. We estimate that it's about 200,000 of our 1.1 million, so about 20% of our students across the state that don't have access to internet at home.
Wow.
That's huge.
I didn't know it was that many. Wow.
Yes, it is. It's huge. It's significant. And it's much more drastic in some communities more than others. Especially, for example, Navajo Nation has very limited access to internet, and it just can really vary from community to community. But I know even in Tucson that there's been challenges with connectivity and access to devices. So the transition has been very challenging for our families, for our students, for our teachers to transition. I think we've seen phenomenal innovation and creativity, and a lot of our teachers have been going above and beyond to serve their students and their families and try to help them through these challenges, but we have to recognize that this is not easy.
What are you hearing about the high school sports? I almost said intercollegiate, but that's a ways away. That's not in your ballpark. What about the sporting events?
So we don't oversee the sports, but I have been in communication with the Interscholastic Association, which oversees all of our athletics for Arizona, and we did link to their guidance on our website as well. What I'm hearing from them is that they're encouraging the coaches to take it slow, to not rush right back in. You know, students might be a little bit out of shape after not having this time for training and for working out together as a team, but they're encouraging coaches to just take it step by step, and they provided very comprehensive recommendations as well. So we were really very pleased that we were able to partner with them and link to their guidance through our resources.
So page. Students will have to wear a mask. Is that one of your guidelines?
It's not a requirement for all students to wear masks. It's one possible mitigation strategy that schools could utilize.
And trying to do the distancing in a classroom, I realize, could be very challenging, correct?
Correct. It's, I mean, we have to be realistic here that it's near impossible for our elementary schools, middle schools, high schools that have, you know, our high schools can even have thousands of students that attend. And so it's just the circumstances we're in. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, that with our staffing levels of teachers and the situation we're in is not ideal for any kind of distancing, but there are, I think we need to be focused on how do we reduce the risk, because we can't completely eliminate the risk. So it's more about how can we make sure that everyone's washing their hands, that we're deep cleaning all the desks and just doing everything we can to mitigate these risks, but knowing that it's not going to look perfect the way that you can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, keeping a mask on a first grader, that's not going to work for very long. Kathy, quickly again, we're out of time, but where can people now go to review the plan, please?
Through our website at www.azed.gov. Lots of resources there for families and educators, too.
All right. Well, good luck. School will be opening before you know it. We're already here pushing into the almost mid-June area, so it won't be long. Thank you very much, Kathy.
Thank you, Bill.
Kathy Hoffman with us from the Office of Superintendent. She is the superintendent of the Arizona Department of Education. All right, Shelley Fishman is back with me in studio. Well, I've got, he's given me the old thumbs down kind of. That means the market's having kind of an off day, but good to see Shelley. We'll hear from him in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios right after this.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
It's easy being green. green, promote wind, install solar, drive electric cars, ban mining.
Wait a minute!
You can't ban mining! Green is good, but hey, no can do without the metals green products need from mining. If you ban mining, you'll ban everything green. And today's minds are on board, researching technologies that provide critical materials for a greener world. Being Green, another miracle from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And look who's back in the studio with me, of course, on the other side of our plexiglass that we have here in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Welcome back, Shelley. Only been 3 months since I've seen you.
You know, time flies when you're having fun. Welcome. I'm really glad to be here. And it's Tuesday, so the market's down.
Yeah. So we're back to
normal.
The old pattern. What happened Friday? This, I guess you'd call it a weird employment report. It just sent our market skyrocketing.
Well, what happened was, number one, most economists were predicting that the unemployment numbers would be relatively severely bad. And instead, they, in two ways, came in much better than expected. The first thing was, it turns out that the Bureau of Labor Statistics was counting the people who are furloughed as being employed rather than unemployed. They did that for 2 months. They did that for May and they did it for April. As a result, those numbers came in lower than what most economists believe the actual numbers were. And as a result, what was predicted to be about 17% unemployment came in at 13 and change. And so, you know, there's no way you can spin that in a bad way. And so, as you would expect, the administration spun it as very positive. The truth is, there's other counting errors in there as well, because at the same time they reported that, you know, a couple of million jobs had been retrieved or regained, they also were reporting that over 2 million people had applied in the same period of time for unemployment. So those two things can't exist in the same galaxy. And, you know, all you can do is scratch your head and say, well, at these levels, you know, when you're into 16, 17, 13, 15, whatever it is, percent unemployed, you can say, hey, it's bad, and a lot of people are suffering.
Well, and then a lot of this information came out over the weekend, and the marketer and the folks on Wall Street on Monday weren't really in the mood to do a big correction.
Well, that's right. What happened was that, you know, the folks who are investors are a pretty optimistic bunch. They don't really care too much about what's happening in the economy. They more care about what corporate profits are going to be doing. And they also are looking at day-to-day news stories because they know that investors react, and also computers, believe it or not, react to the words in the headlines and the words in the stories. And so the reaction yesterday was very, very positive. Yesterday the reaction was somewhat positive. The reaction on Friday was massively positive.
Oh, sure.
And so what we're seeing now is, you know, what I could only call irrational exuberance, because where we are right now, which is close to the all-time highs, we have P/E ratios at, you know, the 23, 24 range, and that's just not sustainable. Nevertheless, if you're an investor, sit back and enjoy it, because what's going to happen, of course, is that the Fed is going to do everything they can to continue to support these levels of investor exuberance, because that's what the administration wants to do.
But if the stimulus runs out?
Well, if the stimulus runs out, you're going to see corporate profits take a hit.
Right.
And so you'll begin to see the market floating back toward the norms of a 17 or 18 P/E ratio. And at that, we're down at around 23,000 rather than 28 or 29,000. I think that's where we're headed long term. But for now, you've got still the effects of the tax cuts, which brought corporate profits up, because corporate taxes, the effective corporate tax rate right now is about 19%. Mm-hmm. And if it stays that way, then that boosts corporate profits. And then if the Fed keeps on shoving more stimulus at us through essentially printing money or things that look like printing money, that's going to keep people buying and people being able to purchase stuff.
So we went into a recession officially in February,
well,
before all of this really exploded.
That's, again, how do you define a recession? If you define a recession as a couple of weeks of reduced GDP growth, then yeah, we did. But if you define a recession a little bit more conservatively as a couple of quarters in a row of reduced GDP growth or negative GDP growth based upon the 12-month average, then we couldn't have gone into a recession in February. It takes a couple of months to prove that you're in a recession. A couple of weeks or a month or 2 months of results don't really make a trend. And so I would prefer to say the economy isn't doing very well right now and a lot of people are suffering. Whether we're in a recession and how soon we get out of it is really something that is going to be studied and looked at very carefully. We know that last year, 2019, we wound up at around a 2% GDP growth overall. That's in keeping with where the GDP growth has been for the past 10 years. So it wasn't a great economy. It wasn't a bad economy. It's about what we expected. And it looked like we were heading into a slower period in the first quarter. And what you and I had talked about several times was that if the fourth quarter fell below 2%, that was not a good sign. Well, it turns out it was just at 2 or 2.1%. So where we were going to be headed in the first quarter anyway, with a recession certainly in manufacturing and some other problems, really was problematic. And so the COVID pandemic has just made things a bunch worse.
Where are we going with all of this?
Well, it's hard to say, Bill. it's very difficult to believe that we can, V recovery out
V-shaped recovery yeah. Instead of the U-shape.
Right. Yeah. It looks to me like we'll get halfway there and then stay halfway there for a while before we see the kind of numbers that we probably would have seen in just the mild recession that I was predicting. So sometime in 2021, we'll see some improvements in recovery. Of course, you've got the naysayers are saying that if Biden wins, we're going to raise taxes on corporations and make it more difficult for individuals to spend money. Of course, the greatest boom time we had in terms of the numbers was the Clinton era, and between 1992 and 2000, corporate taxes were a lot higher than they are now. Individual taxes were a lot higher than they are now. We somehow managed to have a boom. So it's not clear how quickly individual presidential or administrative policy shifts really affect the economy and in what ways they do. Economists will argue about that till you and I are both retired.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that there was a lot of talk about before the Hillary Clinton race with Trump about which would be better for the market, and who knows how it all turns out.
Right. Again, the markets can do very, very well under mixed and very different conditions. And it really has to do very much with consumers and consumer behavior in this country. And at the same time, we're so linked with the rest of the world, how the rest of the world is doing.
Would you say that for the investor right now, this is a time to kind of, what you've been saying, I guess, over the last 3 months, this is sort of a time, Shelly Fishman, to sit tight?
Depends on who you are.
Okay.
Depends on how active an investor you are. So it's always individual. At this point, if I could, and if I was heavily invested in equities, I'd be taking some money off the table so that if the market in fact drops down, I'll have cash to reinvest when the market is at lower levels.
All right, Shelly. So very good to see you. I think do we still have a minute? We've got about a minute left with you. So before we go to CBS Network News at 31 past the hour. So Shelly, from our low point, just to give kind of, again, the big perspective for where the Dow is right now versus where it was at the low point.
So at the low point, we were at 18,000. I think intraday, we even might have peaked down below 18,000. Mm-hmm. But that was the low. Mm-hmm. The high has been, again, intraday, I think it peaked up above 29 on one day.
Right.
But we're at very close to the highs, even, you know, despite today's 200-point something downward movement today. So we're really close to the highs right now. If you believe that things are going to go higher, stay in and, you know, God bless.
Mm-hmm.
If you think that the reality, the real world is somewhere in the 23, 24,000 mark for now, then, you know, act accordingly if you can. Do it under the advice of your advisor and be really careful that you don't do anything to try to time the market too severely. That is a prescription for losing overall.
Great to see you again, Shel.
Bill, great to be back.
Thank you very much. Shelly Fishman with us in the Green Things Zocalo Village studios. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show.
CBS News Special Report. Upbeat music and praise for George Floyd as he is remembered in front of hundreds inside a Houston church. Pastor Mia Wright.
This is a moment of connectivity. This is a moment by which God has gathered people all around the world to connect us around the life of the brother George Perry Floyd.
Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee.
I want to acknowledge those young marchers in the streets. Many of them could not be in this place. They are black and brown, they are Asian, they are white. They are protesting and marching, and I'm saying, as a mama, I hear your cry.
Hundreds have lined up in the Texas heat along a road in suburban Houston that leads to the cemetery where Floyd will be buried today. He died 2 weeks ago while in police custody, leading to massive protests. CBS News Special Report, I'm Matt Piper.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
No. Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We love green things. They're doing so well. One of the reasons is everybody's decided, you know, during the shutdown, why not take up gardening? I've got the backyard. Why not make it real pretty? And to get the pretty things, well, Green Things is the place to go on 13 acres at 3384 East River Road with their amazing plants, trees, annuals, just about anything that grows. They've got it. Green Things, 50 years and still growing. Their website is greenthingsaz.com and, of course, zocalovillage.com as well. We continue now with our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice candidate series. All of our local talk shows here putting together, kind of pooling all of our candidate interviews this time around, which make it really easy for the voters to go to a kind of a clearinghouse for all of our interviews, and that's at kvoi.com. And of course, all of our interviews are also on my website, buckmastershow.com. We turn now to the Pima County Supervisorial District 5 race, and we have Democrat Adelita Grijalva with us on the live line. Adelita's been on the TUSD school board for 18 and a half years. Adelita, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Bill?
Doing real well. You know, I'm still in shock that my friend Richard Elias passed away. Really kind of was like the darkest days. The pandemic had just come on, and then we get news that Richard had passed, and really bad time. And so you stepped up and decided you were going to run for Richard's seat, but you didn't have a lot of time, did you, to gather signatures?
No, we had about in total. Well, it was really sudden. I'd already endorsed Richard. We had one campaign kickoff, and then he just passed away very suddenly. Just very shocked our friends and family, and we haven't had a chance to get together to celebrate his life. So it's really just feeling. It still feels very raw, but we had set 8 days. I wanted to give myself 6 days in order to, you know, verify petition signatures and make sure we had enough. And we knocked on doors, mailed it, left it at the door, because this was really right at the height of, you know, everyone stay home. So I would leave it at the door. People would call me to come pick it up. I would email the PDF. We opened up the headquarters and just kind of showed a video of what we were doing, and everyone was gloved up and masked, and people would walk in and walk out. We left all the doors open, and we were able to gather over 1,500 signatures in 6 days.
Adelita, excuse me. I was just going to say, tell our listeners, what will your platform be? Why do you want to be on the board?
Well, I think it's important for us to focus on recovery. after this pandemic, and then preparedness for when we have another health crisis. I mean, these things will happen as soon as what studies are showing is that we're in the middle of a peak now. We're going to have another uptick when kind of the more of the Memorial Day crowd, and then we may have more based on some of the protests and people kind of gathering, even though the ones that I've attended, everyone has masks. But, you know, I also went around the corner to my Fry's and nobody was wearing a mask. So, you know, it's a mixed bag, really, depending on where you go. The other issue really is going to be investment in small businesses, repairing our roadways, making sure that people have the economic stability in order to buy a home and make purchases that are going to really help to stabilize our economy. The environment and protecting our beautiful Sonoran Desert is going to be a really big issue to me, and being accessible and working with the other supervisors in order to do what we can to make sure we stabilize and improve our economy after this pandemic.
Adelita Grijalva with us on the live line talking about her candidacy, Democrat in the supervisorial District 5. So, Adelita, what happens now with the school board, your position on the school board?
Actually, there isn't a conflict, and I can stay, and I intend to stay on the TUSD board and finish my term and also be on the Board of Supervisors.
And when does that term conclude on the school board?
2022, so I'm in 18 and a half years right now.
Okay. And by the way, and we will have Superintendent Trujillo here on the program on Thursday, kind of outlining the reentry. And we just had at the top of the program, Kathy Hoffman talking about how it's kind of going to be up to every district. May I ask you what your take is on how this reentry is going to look?
Well, I'm very concerned, I have to say, with especially the fact that we have such loose guidelines. And so the responsibility is going to be on each individual district to make sure that we have the preparedness ready to welcome our students, except we don't really have a clear idea of what that looks like. We're looking to other districts to see what they're doing, kind of looking for best practices. But if you think about the timing of when school starts right at the beginning of August, we could still be in a very heightened time in our community where people are contracting the virus. And so we've heard from thousands of parents that said that they're not going to be putting their child into a school building. So we have to make sure we have options. And quite frankly, my children have been fairly isolated at home for the last 3 months. And so just thinking about that kind of thing, you know, you have some summer programs opening and we're not ready for that, especially now where we're looking at so many of our hospitals going into emergency planning mode, making sure that they're ready. We have hospitals that don't have enough of the breathing equipment and ventilators and the like to keep our community healthy. I mean, it's going to get it's very scary right now. And I know that there's a lot of anxious parents like me.
Yeah, it's a very, very difficult time. And again, with computers and trying to get enough computers to every child, I did not realize, Kathy Hoffman shared with us at the top of the program, 1 in 5 Arizona kids does not have an access to a computer. I was amazed at that.
Oh, and I think it's actually might be higher in some of our other districts, especially in TUSD. We issued 16,000. We ordered 20,000, and I think that we distributed them. And then unless you were moving from one school to another, like you were transitioning from elementary to middle school, most students were able to keep their laptops. And so in case we have to start the school year online, that, you know, we don't have to go through that whole process again of redistributing. But there's also a connectivity issue. And that's part of the problem that I've seen with even with Pima County. I didn't realize that the libraries had Wi-Fi that you could go and park in. I said, oh, yeah, we put it on our website. Well, if you don't have internet, how can you see that?
Yeah,
and so I think it's just
that'd be kind of hard. Anyway,
it's kind of hard.
I've only got about a minute left, so go ahead and tell our listeners about where your website, and again, why you're running Adelita Grijalva for District 5.
Oh, well, thank you so much, and I appreciate the time. My website is Adelita, A-D-E-L-I-T-A, supervisor.com. Email, if you have any questions at all, is Adelita4Supervisor@gmail. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, Instagram, even have a TikTok account. So we're doing our best to try to reach people where they are and get as much information out as possible. My platform is really recovery. How are we going to recover from this pandemic? How are we going to stabilize our economy? How are we going to make sure that people have job training and development opportunities, keeping our best and brightest in our educational institutions, K through university, in town, and giving them opportunities to be able to have a life here that we've all love. I mean, I'm a Tucson native and born and raised actually all in D5. So
there
I went through all TUSD schools and stayed here. And so I have a vested interest in keeping this place beautiful for generations to come. And so that is why I'm running. My cell number is 481-4891 if anyone has questions. And I'm available and would really just like to be able to talk to people about why I'm running and answer any questions or concerns that they might have.
Adelita Grijalva, thank you very much.
Thank you. You have a great day. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen.
Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. When you are ready to take a road trip, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, looks very appealing these days. Just a three-hour drive to a beautiful area and cooler, I might add. Normally, and we've been checking the temperature at Silver City, it's usually about 10 degrees cooler than what we've been getting in Tucson. And that's reason enough, I think, to take a beautiful, go to a beautiful area and do some. Well, look at that. Midday temperature, Silver City, 74 degrees right now. That is delightful. That elevation, 5,000 to 7,000 feet. So that might be something to think about here in the upcoming days. Check out southwestnewmexico.org, where to stay and what to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Margaret Regan has been writing about the arts for the Tucson Weekly since 1990, and she is the author of two prize-winning books on immigration. She's also the writer-in-residence for the Pima County Library. Joins us now on the live line. Margaret, how are you?
Oh, I'm okay, Bill.
So I know under these difficult conditions, we're all trying to make do. I was just curious, what is the situation with your residency at the library, the writing program?
Yeah, it's done, Bill. I was in it for a month and a half. It was supposed to be 3 months.
Oh.
And really, it ended middle of March. So that was just, you know, 6 weeks out of the 12. But they had me do some writing. And I posted a number of things on the library website, which should still be there if people wanted to use them. And one of the things is, you know, what I was doing as writer-in-residence, I was supposed to be giving advice to people who want to be writers. And I did a whole thing on that, like, what do I recommend if you want to be a writer? So, I mean, that'll be up for a while, but it's a shame.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, in the irony of it, this is a time when everybody's been reading and starting to write. So we really did need your advice on writing. So, but you say some of those tips, at least, are at the Pima County website.
Yeah, you can at least go there. You know, I had thought, well, maybe I could do sessions outside. Yeah, I was having one-on-one sessions with prospective writers. And I was thinking, well, I could go to Himmel Park and sit on a bench and... But then the library really said no one-on-one events. You know, they're trying to be very careful, and good for them. They've opened. You can go that you can order a book, and they'll give it to you at the doorway, but you're not allowed inside. But at least the librarians are in there and, you know, responding to people's needs. So that's a good thing.
It's a good thing, too, a hopeful sign that Etherton Gallery is reopening today.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah, you know, I did a story for the Weekly early in, well, I guess it was mid-May, and at that time, Carrie Etherton, the proprietor at Etherton Gallery, he was planning to reopen on May 18th, and he changed his mind. You know, a lot of people did. You know, the governor had allowed those organizations, those kinds of businesses, to open up again. But a lot of people felt that it was just too early, and certainly many of the restaurateurs thought that. So they had a group called Too Soon, get it? You know, Tucson, Too Soon.
Mm-hmm.
So Terry, I think, kind of, you know, decided that, you know, he should really consider that. But so as of today, he is opening June 9th today, and it's by appointment only. You know, you can call the gallery. And, you know, I think it's easier in a place like a gallery, which is a limited... I mean, that's a nice size gallery.
Sure.
Very big. But, you know, it's quite different from a great big museum and trying to figure out, you know, how to control the numbers of people and all that. So I think, you know, it's easier for him to get back in business than it is for the, you know, the big museums in town.
What did you hear about Tucson Museum of Art?
Oh, well, it's pretty interesting. I had a really nice talk with the director there, whose name I can never.
It's Jeremy, and then we'll just say you had a nice talk with Jeremy.
Yeah, Jeremy, that's what I always do.
It starts with an M.
Yeah, his name is Mikolajczak.
Yeah, it's a tongue twister. So we'll just say you had a nice chat with Jeremy, and what did he say?
Yeah, I had a nice chat with him, and he says their goal is to open July 2nd. So that's getting to be, 3 weeks away.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's going to be a different experience. It's quite, we go to art galleries. We just pay our ticket, and then we wander around. You know, we do whatever we want. So for now, you're going to have to order a ticket online, like you do with some plays, or big buster art shows in New York City. You get a time stamp thing. That's what they're going to do. Like if you wanted to go, you go online, you sign up for a time, and if that time is already filled, whatever number of people they've decided on, you're going to have to choose another time.
Huh.
So that's a good thing. I mean, they can, in that way, they can regulate how many people are there. And when you get there, the workers at the, at the booth when you go in, they're going to have one of those big plexiglass screens. Like you've probably seen at Walgreens, that's where I've seen them.
And like we have now here in our studio. So everybody, everybody's got them now.
Everybody's got them. And you're supposed to wear masks.
Yeah.
So, they'll keep the numbers down. And to start out, they're definitely lowering their usual numbers of hours. It's just going to be open Thursday through Sunday. So I think that's wise. They're taking baby steps. Although I'm sure it will be a big thing for them to get back in business there. But, one step at a time, maybe by the fall they'll feel like they can open up more broadly. Or maybe museums will be like this from now on.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah.
I do, and we're quickly running out of time. There are a couple of interesting murals. I think there are three of them in downtown.
Yeah, I thought that's a kind of a vibrant thing happening. Three Black Lives Matter murals have gone up downtown, in this space of time in these 2 weeks that, the country has been roiled by the death of George Floyd and, just so many terrible things happening. But so these are things that, have gone up pretty fast in response to that. I think they're interesting because two of them are trying to be positive. There's a black artist named Robbie Lee Harris, and he did a mural. It's on the side of the Rialto. The Rialto is a big champion of art murals. So he has a big sign on it that says, the lettering Black Lives Matter, and it pictures a black woman crying and holding onto a flower that's dying, I guess. But he also has big words saying justice, freedom, love, equality, peace. And the artist said that he was trying to look forward to a better time when we can get, do something about the racism in the country. So
yeah, he was trying to be positive.
He was trying, certainly acknowledging the hurt and the terrible things that have happened. But, trying to be positive and hoping we can all do better in the future.
And again, you said there's one at the Rialto. Where are the other two?
One is on the Club Congress, the Congress Hotel.
Right.
And another one, I haven't seen it. I'm not sure where this is, the MSA Annex. That's some kind of a downtown space, and I don't know the address. And that's two women working on it together. A woman named Jamil and another woman, last name Wolf, and they also are trying to look towards the future, moving forward.
It's on the west side of I-10, down the street from the Mercado. Thank you very much.
Ray, there you go.
Ray just gave me that information on my screen. Thank you, Ray. I have about a minute, and I want to mention the Fox. I heard Fox Tucson Theater was thinking about the first event maybe in mid-September. What are you hearing?
Yeah, no, I don't know about that. You're more connected with them.
Yes.
But, I think it's harder for the performing arts than it is for the visual arts to figure something out because, we love to go to shows there and we're all crowded up next to each other in the seats. And you know, that obviously takes more planning than just allowing fewer people into your art museum.
So, oh, yeah.
So that's good if they're figuring something out to open up in September. I'll be curious, all the theaters and musical places, too, you know, how they're going to deal with it.
All right, and I did hear that the Vienna Philharmonic resumed live performances, and I think they allowed maybe 50 to 100 people to the hall. So those are pretty lucky people, I think, too.
This has happened in Austria?
Yeah, I believe so. Wow. I think it just happened. So
interesting.
Things are slowly moving along in a positive direction. Margaret, always a pleasure. Anything you've been writing about in the weekly, or are you kind of taking a hiatus?
No, I'm kind of on hiatus right now, you know, because, you know, the emphasis is all on all these other things going on, and there aren't too many galleries to review. There are a few open downtown.
Right.
I'm hoping maybe I'll get a chance.
Well, we're glad you could spend some time with us. Thank you very much. Margaret Regan of the Tucson Weekly, writing about the arts. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Always a pleasure to see my buddy Ray Allen on the other side of the glass. Kind of like old times with Ray. Coming up, of course, we've got Talking About Money with Dave Ramsey. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon.